Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Today on Edgewise, we're speaking with Dan Hendricks. Dan has been the president and CEO of Interface Incorporated, a $1 billion global manufacturer of modular commercial and residential carpet and broadloom carpet for the past 10 years. Under his leadership, Interface helped create a viable market for modular carpet globally, a business that was once considered no more than a niche business. The company now leads with a 35% share of the market globally, and Dan's mission is to ensure that each of the Interface business units, Interface Floor, Bentley Prince Street, Floor, and Interface Raise, are all high-performing assets. Interface is a great place to work and a good environmental steward focused on the company's Mission Zero goal to eliminate any negative environmental footprint by the year 2020. Dan was appointed chairman of the company's board of directors in October 2011, succeeding Interface founder and chairman, and actually a person who's been on the program before, Ray C. Anderson. Dan, welcome to Edgewise.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
If you don't mind, can you just quickly summarize the state of Interface when you came on board? Because, of course, everybody is interested in what happened when there was a major change in the way your company operated. And you were chief financial officer at the time, correct?
Mm-hmm. I was for about 15 years before that.
But it's interesting, you were actually the skeptic. You were skeptical of a decision that was made at about that time.
About
sustainability.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a story within itself.
Yeah, we want to hear that story. Everybody wants to hear that story.
We were a public company.
Yes.
And we were a typical brown company, take, make, waste. And Ray Anderson was being asked by our customers, which were the architectural design community, what is Interface going to do about the environment? And the answer was, what else? We're going to comply with law. Well, he read the book, College of Commerce, from Paul Hawken. He had this epiphany, Mother Earth's in trouble, and Interface is going to lead the sustainability movement and get off oil. So in 1994, we're 90% petroleum-based raw materials, and our CEO and founder says, hey, we're going to get off oil. Well, as a CFO, I'm looking at the economics of getting off oil and saying it doesn't make any sense. I guess in his book, he said he went around the bend. A lot of people thought that. I probably thought he went crazy because it actually didn't make any sense how we were going to get off oil.
And what happened next?
Well, then there's a whole transformation of the company. You talked about the transformation of Interface. There was a transformation of the company where Ray had 19 converts when he first came up with the idea to get off oil. That was his first meeting. And one by one, he was converting people. And the first thing that we did, which made a lot of business around sustainability, was let's reduce waste. Let's build product standards with no waste. And that was huge. That was a different thought prospect then. You know, today, everybody says, let's have a waste-free product. But in 1994, everybody built in waste in their standards and didn't think they could get to zero. Well, that had a big impact on the company because in order to do that, you had to get a lot of grassroots ideas on the shop floor. So a lot of new innovative thinking was happening around reducing waste. It allowed us to fund a lot of the sustainability ideas because we were eliminating waste, and there was a $60 million opportunity if we got it to zero. And so we started pecking away at reducing waste through a program we called Quest. And it was a big win early, and it started engaging the people. Okay, let's think differently. And then in 1997, we had a sales meeting where Ray invited 1,200 people all the way from the shop floor to the salespeople. And he brought in a lot of these dream team members, the Paul Hawkins, the Bill McDonoughs, the John Picards, the Amory Lovins, to talk about what a sustainable company might look like. And he gave our people a vision, and that was really the beginning of the transformation of the company. And if you just fast forward, I took over the company in 2001, actually announced as a CEO in October 2000. Which was the month that we had the biggest decline in our marketplace at the time. So timing's everything. And our business fell 22% in a matter of months. And we were highly leveraged. And one of the things that I decided to do was we're going to get out of all these other businesses that aren't really sustainable businesses, and we're going to focus on carpet tile, modular carpet. We invented it. It was the product or the business that looked the best in recession, and it was only 43% of our business at the time. So I got out of about $500 million in revenues that were not carpet tile. I got out of a fabrics business, access flooring business, installation business, and just focused on the modular business and really focused on how to globalize the company with an eye towards sustainability on everything that we did.
You had mentioned that people from the shop floor internally, people brought their best ideas, you know, that type of thing. Is that pretty much the way you handle it? internally driven innovation, or did you go outside for some external perspective, outside thought leader, people that you had mentioned, you know, big names, big thought leaders in innovation?
We did a bit of all of that. You know, we created and have our own R&D innovative people within the business. One of the biggest things that we did was we partnered with our suppliers. And you can't get there if your suppliers aren't with your mission and your vision. We selected out our biggest yarn supplier because they really didn't want to go down the road of post-consumer recycled content with our yarn. And then we had a lot of innovations along the way, of which, you know, a couple of them came from the outside. So it was a combination of inside and outside. I will tell you that we are now moving more to an open architecture. And how do we actually farm outside ideas and influence our business? Because you can't have a closed culture and really innovate. And you might be one of the smartest guys around the block, but there are a lot, there's somebody that's smarter than you out there, trust me.
Exactly.
But, you know, the big story in the whole transformation of Interface was innovation, allowing our people to think out of the box. And the biggest thing is showing them that you're going to fund some of these ideas that are out of the box.
Sure.
Creates an engaged culture.
Right.
And an empowered culture. And our biggest wins over the last 6 years are all around sustainability and innovation. Biomimicry led to Entropy, which was the best-selling product design in our industry. It led to Cool Blue, which is our 100% recycled backing. It led to Reentry, which is the process where we actually take the carpet back and shave the face mm-hmm. and send it to our yarn suppliers that we partnered with to create post-consumer recycled content. Tactiles. Literally, how do you install our product without glue? That came around sustainability. How would nature literally keep the carpet tiles on the floor? Well, it was simple. It was gravity. So we eliminated 95% of the glue and just used a little post-it, almost stamp, to keep it down and use gravity to keep it down.
I just have one more question. We can keep going here. You had mentioned, again, your initial skepticism in working with Ray on this. If you don't mind, can you recall a specific instance where you made the switch in your head? Do you know what I mean? I mean, the light bulb sort of went off, or did it happen over a course of time? Do you know what I mean?
Well, there's a couple of lessons learned, moments of truth through some of the things that we talk about. And one happened to be a solar array. We were trying to put in California, we have a cow plant in Los Angeles, City of Industry, and we want to put in a solar array for the plant. And when you did the payback, the ROI on that, it was a 99-year payback. It wasn't really a payback. It was a cost.
Right.
Okay? And the state of California was giving us 90% of the money to fund this project. And it, at the time, was the largest solar array on a manufacturing facility in California. And I wouldn't sign the CEA. I'm the CFO, and I'm like,
not going to do it.
The CEA is a capital expenditure authorization, right. And I just ignored it, saying, this is going to go away. And about 6 months went by, and Ray walks in the office. He goes, are you going to sign that CA? And I said, no, it doesn't. There's no ROI. And he got red-faced. And he's always an interesting persuader. He goes, have you ever thought about solar-made carpet? That maybe somebody will buy our carpet because we run in two tufting machines with a solar array, and we'll pay for it out of selling carpet. Well, right there, he sort of flipped my thinking that, you know, there's goodwill in the marketplace. And by the way, we got an order from the state of California that paid for that solar array on one order. So yeah, that was a moment where you got to get out of the box to think about it.
Okay, another question. But this has to do with when you became the CEO. I mean, you had demonstrated this skepticism. Did that influence the way you approached being a CEO? Ray was chairman of the board. But did your employees trust that you were going to go forward as Ray did? Or were they all still skeptical about you now? And did you find that there was a little bit of, you know, can we trust this band to continue?
Absolutely. Because of where I come from. Remember, I'm come from a financial background. And Ray even questioned it. I mean, Ray walked in my office one day and he said, are you going to dump sustainability? I'd only been in the job a month. And I said, no, but I'm going to figure out how to make it work from a business standpoint. First of all, you have to have economic sustainability. But I did recognize there was goodwill in the marketplace, and I did recognize that we had an engaged culture that rivaled nobody. In my opinion, we could beat anybody in engagement in our company because of the higher purpose. And so how do you tap that engagement to create out-of-the-box innovative thinking? And we started having some breakthroughs. I don't know if timing is everything, but we had Entropy, we had Reentry, we had Cool Blue, and we started significantly moving the needle. And before that, we had the waste elimination. And we had less is more. We didn't talk about that. But we dematerialized our product significantly over that time using less materials. But we started having a lot of wins, and a lot of people started believing in it even more. And so success breeds success, and we got on that train and we kept going. But there's no way that I could have said to our people, we're not going down this road of sustainability. I mean, it was already in our culture, our DNA. And there's a big thing around higher purpose. We get a lot of great people wanting to work for Interface just because of where we are on the environment and sustainability. It's all interconnected.
Okay, so what is sustainability as it's seen at Interface?
Well, that's the big debate generally. What is sustainability? It's one of the most overused words there is. Succinctly, it is eliminating your environmental footprint. There's a finite amount of raw materials or resources. And so how do you really reduce the impact? That's the mission zero. And then you define it in certain business initiatives. One is eliminate waste. Another is dematerialize the product, use less materials. Another is green energy, have closed loop recycling. So our definition was defined by Ray in about 1995, 96. And so those principles for us is really just keep reducing the impact that you have on the environment. And then there's a bigger purpose that Ray had, and that's be restorative. Influence other people to follow you in this journey around sustainability. And so it was not only Mission Zero, but also be restorative.
What is Mission Zero?
Mission Zero is by the year 2020, have no negative impact on the environment with your products and your processes.
And that's worldwide?
That's worldwide. If you go on our website, you'll see that our water intake is down 82%. Waste to the landfill is down 80%+. Recycled content, closed loop recycling post-consumer is 40%. Our embedded energy in our product per unit is down 43%.
And how big is the Interface workforce currently?
It's around 4,500 employees worldwide. Half our business is outside the United States. So we manufacture on four continents. We got manufacturing plants in Sydney, Bangkok, Shanghai, three in Europe, and two in the United States.
Outside of the United States, what would you say is the cultural perception of sustainability as it relates to corporate activities?
Within our company or?
Yes, as it specifically relates to the Interface business outside of the United States.
If you go around the world, everybody has been inoculated with sustainability. When Ray passed away, I did a tour talking to our people about sustainability and where they are, in fear that they may think that now we don't have Ray as the leader, that we may change course again. And it is literally at every level of our company. I talk to people in Thailand that are on the shop floor all the way to the salespeople. Same thing in Australia, same thing at Bentley Prince Street, same thing in Holland. And surprisingly, a lot of these people had never met Ray, but they act like they knew Ray. They had a personal connection to his vision and Ray. And it has the same amount of energy around the world as it does, you know.
It's interesting. I'm stuck on the analogies almost between someone like Ray and someone like Steve Jobs, who is so closely associated with the Apple brand, the Apple user experience, the Apple culture. And even now, even in death, Ray casts a pretty long shadow, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Well, he gave the Interface a fantastic gift. I mean, he created his legacy about this aspirational brand called Interface that was not going to have any negative impact to the environment. And it's interesting, just grow into the brand. You know, you don't have to really recreate yourself because you're already this aspirational brand that's way up here that's recognized worldwide in the sustainability circles and in business. I mean, Ray really felt like the Interface could change the way people did business around the world. He was a true believer in being restorative and doing that. He had some really positive impacts on a lot of big companies around his vision around sustainability.
When you go abroad and you're trying to build the company, do you find that that's a plus or kind of an obstacle that you have to overcome to win their support and their personal respect?
No, it's not. I mean, it's not an obstacle. For me personally, there's a lot of respect for me because I was the guy that traveled when I was a CFO. And so I have a real connection to every one of the cultures that are out there. And, you know, people want to be led. They really do. And particularly when you have a higher purpose that we have, and it all makes perfect sense to them in their personal lives as well as being part of Interface. They all want to do the right thing. You know, we call it doing well by doing good. It's part of what we do. It's easy for me to talk to our people and get them engaged because they're there.
All right. What's the future for Dan? What are you going to be doing next?
Well, right now I am pushing, we are pushing as a company around innovation and how to accelerate to Mission Zero and then what is beyond Mission Zero in 2020. So we've created Appreciative Inquiry where we did interviews of about 100 of our people. And it was all around how do we accelerate the innovation to Mission Zero. And we're engaging a global organization, and we're trying to grow up and be global. That didn't sound like a lot, but Interface is as global as anybody. So how do you literally connect all this power to accelerate innovation is where I am today.
And you're also doing a great deal with technology, right?
Yes. Well, we just got on Southwest Airlines. We're putting carpet tile now on airplanes, and that was a big technology breakthrough to get through Boeing's testing process and the FAA. Well, I think we're going to change the airline industry with carpet tile on planes, and we're going to bring it back and recycle it. It lasts longer, so it's going to be less material being used. And there's a huge breakthrough for us, and that's all around technology.
Dan, our primary audience, at least on the podcast side, I would have to say, well, obviously, all levels of the organizational pyramid listen to the program, but I would have to say that our thickest slices of people tend to fall into the new manager and middle manager categories. Do you have any words of advice or some thoughts a CEO might provide to a new manager or a middle manager?
I would say you have to engage them. We go through Gallup's, the Q12s.
The survey?
We go through that. It's almost like a 360. Well, you understand what's going on. And what Gallup's does to me, it creates a dialogue with managers and people that report to those managers. And then we do Strengths Finder, which is part of Gallup's as well, to figure out what's the best opportunity for people to hit their potential in training. I think you got to allow them to think out of the box, allow them to fail sometimes. You just don't want them all to look the same and act the same. That diversity you need to embrace, and you have to invest in some of this collaboration, these big ideas that come out of it. And a lot of the big ideas come out from middle managers and people that just came to your company that are from the outside that have a lot of different ways to look at your business. I think you have to embrace diversity and you have to invest in your people.
We've been speaking to Dan Hendricks. He's CEO and president of Interface Incorporated, a giant business changing, pioneer in the area of sustainable business practices. Dan, thanks so much for being with us on Edgewise today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure telling my story.
AMA webcasts bring you 60 minutes of thought-provoking insight, specific answers to your management challenges, and conversations with renowned thought leaders. Best of all, they're all free. For a complete schedule of upcoming webcasts, visit the events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.